Do you view your food as medicine? It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kenton. Maybe you should. I mean, if your doctor prescribed pills to help control high blood pressure, would you follow the doctor's orders? What if the doctor prescribed fresh fruit and veggies instead of a pharmaceutical? Would you still follow the doctor's orders? There is a growing movement in the medical community that is prioritizing nutrition as medicine. But how well does it work? Join our conversation, 800-642-1234, the Food is Medicine Movement. You can also email us ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Dr. Dariush Mosafarian. He is a cardiologist and director of the Food is Medicine Institute at the Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy at Tufts University in the Boston area. Dr. Mosafarian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Lee. Great to be on with you.
Yeah, so you say this Food is Medicine movement's the first real meaningful major intervention you've seen to improve health and reduce healthcare disparities. So why is this movement important for the field of medicine?
Well, we've known for a long time that nutrition is a growing problem with all the rates of obesity and diabetes and also many other diet-related diseases like poor gut health and brain health and even potentially reduced immunity and other challenges. But we really haven't had a tool in healthcare to do anything about it. You tell a patient, you know, go eat healthier and go out into the world, regardless of their economic circumstances, where they live, their knowledge, their education, making it very hard for most people to actually, eat healthy food. Food as medicine is an innovation. It's been around in some ways for decades, but it's particularly accelerated in the last several years, where doctors don't just say, go eat healthy, but actually write prescriptions for healthy food that is then supported by and even sometimes delivered by the healthcare system. And so just like you get a prescription, imagine you got a prescription for the blood pressure lowering drug, but there was nowhere to fill that prescription, right? You wouldn't be very successful. So similarly here, or you have to pay for it all yourself. Very similarly, just like a drug prescription, when you fill a prescription for fruits and vegetables or even potentially medically tailored meals, fully prepared meals for the right patient, the healthcare system pays for some or all of that prescription, and it gets, potentially even delivered to your home. So it actually creates an intervention that can not only help people eat more nourishing food, but also really particularly target patients that have challenges eating healthy, who tend to be the ones who have lower income, live in rural areas, have lower education, or are from certain racial or ethnic minority groups, who also have the highest rates of disease.
So those sound like some structural barriers, some bigger barriers perhaps beyond healthcare itself.
Well, we've known that as really, again, for decades, but it's become really, really clear in the last 20 years that, you've heard this saying that your zip code predicts your health more than your genetic code. There are clearly social determinants of health, the environment you live in, your neighborhood, the safety of your neighborhood, the air quality, your income, that are very, very strong determinants of health. Food as medicine isn't fundamentally altering those, right? Those are deep, deep structural, differences in different communities in the country. But food is one of the mechanisms by which your zip code and your, social status affects your health is clearly nutrition, based on the kinds of foods that are available, the marketing of foods, the culture of foods, the knowledge around cooking and availability and time of cooking. And so food as medicine can be part of the solution.
Dr. Mosafarian, you studied what happens when patients were given these food boxes or prepaid vouchers of around $500 per year to purchase fresh fruits and veggies. What were your takeaways from your study?
Well, there have been many studies that we have done and others have done on this topic. And one thing we have to keep in mind is that most of the studies so far are not randomized controlled studies. They are interventions. So people who have poor health, particularly diabetes, for example, or high blood pressure, get these interventions. And then, 6 months later, 8 months later, sometimes a year later, the researchers evaluate what happened to them. But there often is not a randomized control group. And so there are some randomized trials, but I just want to first give that warning, because until we have more randomized trials, we can't be 100% confident in these findings. But in interventions where these treatments are given for an average of about 6 months, for an average of about $40 a month in food vouchers, you see a range of better health outcomes. Blood pressure goes down Blood sugar is better controlled, body weight goes down, people's nutritional quality improves, people's mental health, self-perceived mental health improves, their self-perceived physical health improves. Many of these changes are modest. We're not talking about, effects that are on the order of magnitude of some of our most powerful drugs, but it's a bunch of different things that food affects, right? Where a drug affects one pathway. So you have multiple small, modest effects on these different health outcomes. And for some interventions in the right populations, who are particularly sick, hospitalizations go down, emergency room visits go down, so healthcare spending even goes down. So these studies as a whole are quite promising and really support the need to expand and test these programs, especially in randomized control trials. And we're in the midst of several of these and have completed some randomized control trials, which I can also tell you about.
Yeah, we're talking about a new movement to put food and nutrition at the forefront of patient care with our guest, Dr. Dariush Mosafarian. He's the director of the Food as Medicine Institute at Tufts University, and we welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at wpr.org. Dwayne in Westfield, good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you have for us?
Well, what happened, I was actually, something like that happened to me, but that was around 2007 and 2008. I had a really bad tooth problem, so I was trying to self-medicate by taking Eucerin and a lot, and about 42 ounces of water every half hour. That was a bad idea.
Oh.
I got rushed over to Ripon Medical Center, and I basically was having like a heart attack. So they put me in ICU, and under 24 hours, I somehow bounced back, and the doctor gave me a prescription. Now I couldn't understand his reading, so I asked the nurse, what kind of stuff do I got to get, penicillin or whatever? They said no. She goes, oh, he prescribed you Dr. Pepper.
What?
I'm like, what? Dr. Pepper? What the hell does that mean? He's like, he says, what it is the sodium content in Dr. Pepper will balance out your kidneys.
Dwayne, I appreciate that perspective. What about your fruits and veggies, though?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not a huge veggie person, but unfortunately I found out I got high blood pressure, so they're probably going to start pushing that on me now.
Dwayne, I appreciate your call. I don't know if Dr. Pepper would qualify as food necessarily, Dr. Mosafarian, but it goes all the way back many years ago now. So I guess just from Dwayne's perspective, he'd get the Dr. Pepper, but the veggies might be a tall ask.
Yeah, well, I've not heard Dr. Pepper as a food as medicine intervention before. It's quite interesting. Maybe it was a replacement for some other soda that he was drinking a lot, right? And they thought that this was modestly better, but it's really clear. We should start out with the point that if people don't know this, I assume most listeners know this. It's very clear that poor nutrition is the top cause of death and the top cause of disability in our country, leading to incredible rates of diabetes. Half of all adults in our country now have either diabetes or prediabetes. And actually one in four teenagers has diabetes or prediabetes in our country. Almost three quarters of all adults have overweight or obesity. So being healthy is now the exception, not the norm. Fewer people are healthy now than unhealthy, and poor nutrition is the top cause. And I've recognized that as a cardiologist for a long time. But, healthcare has mostly ignored nutrition and said, well, nutrition belongs outside of the doctor's office or outside of the surgery suite or outside of the hospital room. But this is changing, and this is changing in many states who are now implementing. There's 11 states who have either approved or pending permissions from the federal government to test food as medicine in Medicaid. There are major private healthcare payers like Kaiser Permanente and Elevance and Geisinger Health and others who are testing food as medicine. The VA hospitals are testing food as medicine. The Indian Health Service, which treats the tribal reservations, is testing food as medicine. So this is actually starting to really gain some momentum.
Dr. Mosafarian, if we were to pay for fruits and veggies up front, do we have any concept of how much money we could save on the back end through healthcare?
Well, it's a really important question, and there is certainly optimism that food as medicine could save money. My most important point here is that saving money should not be the bar first. I do think there are some circumstances where food as medicine may save money, but the first point I'd like to make is that that should not be the bar, because that's not the bar for anything else in healthcare. When I prescribe a blood pressure lowering drug or a cholesterol lowering drug like a statin, certainly if a procedure is done like an echocardiogram or a cardiac catheterization or all the things that I do as a cardiologist, none of those things actually save money. They're all cost effective, which means, we're getting a good deal for the money we spend on health. We're buying health at a good price. That's what cost effective means. But blood pressure screening and control, cholesterol screening and control, even cancer screening and control is not cost saving. So there's very few things in healthcare that we do that are cost saving. So I don't think we should hold food as medicine to a bar of absolute cost savings. I think we should say that it's cost equivalent. It should be at least no more costly than the other things we're doing. That being said, there are certain patient populations in whom specific food as medicine interventions do appear to save money, and that's people about 5% of the population consumes about 30 or 40% of healthcare resources in our country because they're incredibly sick. I'm not blaming them. They're incredibly sick. They have multiple conditions like kidney disease and diabetes and high blood pressure and heart failure and cancer, and they're in and out of hospitals and incredibly sick people. Giving those people about half of their meals a week, fully prepared at home, does seem to save money because it keeps them from bouncing in and out of hospitals and emergency rooms. If you go to an emergency room once, it could cost $10,000, $20,000. And so giving people, some meals, which is much, much cheaper in that case, does seem to save money. Fruits and vegetables for somebody with diabetes, or fruits and vegetables for somebody with high blood pressure, I don't know that that's going to save money, but our science suggests that it's no more costly than giving people, typical drugs and commonly prescribed drugs.
But it will save lives.
And it saves lives, and it makes people feel better. I mean, there's very few drugs that improve people's perceived mental health, right? And this has been seen in several food as medicine studies where people feel better. They feel better eating healthy foods. And beyond the health effects, I talked to a woman in Iowa who had severe diabetes, was going out of control. The doctors told her she might, have to get an amputation. Her eyes were failing, her kidneys were failing. She went on one of these food as medicine programs, and all of those things improved over about 6 months. But the most, really incredible thing she told me was that it changed her relationship with her 9-year-old son. Now that she was getting vouchers to go to the grocery store to buy fruits and vegetables, when she picked up her 9-year-old from school, she used to say, "What do you want to do?" He'd say, "Take me to McDonald's." And now he was saying, "Take me to the grocery store." And they'd go to the grocery store, they'd shop together, they'd come home, they'd cook together, they'd sit and eat dinner together. She said that had never happened before. And so she was most thankful to Food as Medicine because of how it changed her relationship with her son.
You find yourself nodding along with our guest, Dr. Dariush Mosafarian. He's a cardiologist and director of the Food as Medicine Institute at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts University. And you can join our conversation with your stories or questions for our expert. Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're looking at food in a little bit of a different light this morning with our guest, Dr. Dariush Mosafarian. He's a cardiologist and director of the Food as Medicine Institute at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy. That's at Tufts University. So how can we better tailor our diet to help keep the doctor away, and could it really be as simple as an apple? 800-642-1234 to join our conversation or ask our guest a question. And Dr. Mosafarian, I'm curious about how nutrition is taught in medical schools and the connection that this is made for medical students. Are they getting the same sort of idea about food as medicine?
Well, this is what got me into the field. You know, throughout my training, 4 years of medical school, 3 years of internal medicine, and 4 years of cardiology, 11 years of training, I learned almost nothing about nutrition and the heart and diabetes and weight and, you know, all of the things I was seeing. And so that was a, you know, an eye-opening experience. And that's really what got me into this field to be someone who, you know, is trained in medicine, but also able to understand and try to address, you know, people's nutrition. Now, when you ask either medical students or you know, young doctors in training or even experienced physicians, about 70 to 80% say that they believe that poor nutrition is one of the top issues facing their patient, and about 70 to 80% say that they don't feel adequately trained to be able to address that nutrition. And so there's clearly understanding and interest in that training, but it's been lacking. And the average medical school gives today less than 4 hours of nutrition education in medical school, 4 hours to one of the most important things facing patients. Now, I'm hopeful that that's starting to change. And as just one example, there's a accreditation organization called the ACGME, which accredits or says that, you know, your program is okay for all residencies and fellowships, all the specialty training in the country. And they have announced that for their 2026 update of the standards for, you know, being an accredited residency or fellowship training program, they are going to start the process to look into making nutrition education a mandatory part of residency and fellowship. There's a similar accreditation agency for medical schools called the AAMC. I really hope that the AAMC will do the same thing. If those two organizations, the AAMC and ACGME, make some reasonable nutrition education a mandatory part of training, it'll happen. Doctors are asking for it, patients are asking for it, and I think it's time.
Dr. Darius Mosafarian, our guest, and let's go to your questions for him now. Nancy and Mequon, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for this very important program and all your wonderful comments. I wonder if there is any, since this is a, we're talking about metabolic health, and one of the issues with metabolic health is having sugar in all the food. And the food producers put this sugar in the food, and then we crave the sugar, of course. So is there any push to try to put regulations on the producers of the food? Because this drives so much of the healthcare dollar.
Nancy, thank you. I was thinking about human behavior in respect to food as medicine and how Dwayne wouldn't eat his veggies but drank a Dr. Pepper. And so what about the other aspect, the producers? Can we find a way to improve diet through what, you know, what the market provides?
Well, you know, food as medicine is going to be one important solution in healthcare, but it's not going to fix all the problems. And, you know, the food system is complicated, and we certainly need other solutions. And we've put out a report last year that we submitted to the White House recommending about 30 policies, including food as medicine, but also other policies to really start to alter what producers make, what people eat, and incentives around all of these things. Also, most people don't know the Biden administration in September of 2022 put out a really terrific national strategy on addressing hunger, nutrition, and health, which has a lot of things in it. One of the things I do think we need to do is address not only added sugar, but also refined starch, all of the corn starch, rice starch, refined wheat in foods. Both added sugar and refined starch are quite harmful for metabolic health. The FDA is considering and talking about at least creating voluntary standards for added sugar limits. Some countries, you know, are thinking about making those more mandatory. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, does have the power to say that, you know, added sugar above a certain amount isn't safe. But I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon because it would be politically very challenging. But I do think the FDA should, at a minimum, you know, work with industry to put out voluntary standards and say, look, you shouldn't have this much sugar in some of these foods. And frankly, like, of course, America has a sweet tooth. But I can't eat most sweetened products. I mean, I wish, you know, sweetened yogurts and some other products had about half the sugar they do now.
Dr. Mosafarian, before we run out of time here, I want to ask how drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy have changed medicine and how they relate to the food as medicine movement.
Well, these are important drugs that are effective. Not everybody can take them. About a year out from a prescription, less than 1 in 4 people are still on the drugs. And so a lot of people can't tolerate them for a range of reasons. But for those people who can tolerate them, you can get 20% weight loss, which is pretty dramatic. Yeah. Now, on the flip side, they're incredibly expensive. And if all of the eligible Americans who are eligible for Ozempic for weight loss got the drug, that single drug would cost more than all the other prescription drugs that we pay for in the entire country. So it is way too expensive, and it'll bankrupt us. So we have this challenge of an effective drug that's going to bankrupt us. And so I think this is where, interestingly, combining the drug with food as medicine could be interesting and should be tested. You get the drug for a year, where that's where most of the weight loss happens, and then people's weight plateaus. Right now, if you go off the drug, people regain weight. But what if we put people on a very comprehensive food as medicine program with behavioral support and counseling and cooking education? That would be much cheaper than the drug, and then they could maintain the weight loss. And so I'm interested in thinking about, could these drugs with food as medicine be a recipe for success?
Hey, Dr. Mosafarian, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I got just about 30 seconds left, but for folks who are nodding their head in agreement this entire conversation, what can they do to find out more about food as medicine?
Well, you can come to look up Tufts and the Food as Medicine Institute. You'll look at some of the projects that we're doing, and also look up what the federal government is doing, Health and Human Services, the VA hospital, others. And even ask your own healthcare system, are you doing some food as medicine studies? These are more and more available. And if patients have diet sensitive conditions, you may be eligible and be able to test one of these programs.
Dr. Dariush Mosafarian, cardiologist and director of the Food as Medicine Institute at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts University. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.